First Baptist Church of Redmond, May 29th, 2022, John chapter 6, Comforting Words.
Please rise and join me in reading John 6, 20 through 21. But he said to them, It is I, do not be afraid. So they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. You may be seated.
The sermon is from John 6, 15 through 21, and I'm calling it Comforting Words, Comforting Words. You know what? I'm challenged when I look at the Bible and look for ideas, look for slides to illustrate it, and this is a real sermon that was preached on the same topic. And I avoided the sermon title, but somebody really preached that sermon in America to Americans, Sleepless in Seattle. That's a real sermon that somebody preached, and I try not to do that, but I use a lot of puns, but I try not to do that. So, but it's the miracle of Jesus walking on the water. There's a theory that in the middle of the lake of Gennesaret Tiberias, how did he do it? And I read an article, it's for real. A scientist guessed that Jesus didn't do a miracle. He walked on ice. He surfed on ice. Did Jesus really walk on water? Or maybe he surfed on a patch of ice? I resisted the temptation to include a t-shirt of Jesus surfing on the Sea of Galilee. That's the conclusion of a 2006 scientific article published in everyone's favorite bedtime reading item, the Journal of Paleoimmunology. The article was titled, Is There a Paleolimnological Explanation for Walking on Water in the Sea of Galilee? Dr. Doran Knopf, he's really a doctor, an expert in oceanography and limnology. What is limnology? The study of lakes. The study of lakes. And his co-authors speculate that an odd combination of atmospheric conditions may call rare patches of floating ice on the Sea of Galilee. According to their calculations, the chances of this flowing ice phenomenon happening are less than once every, wait for it, 1,000 years. They happen only once 1,000 years, if ever. But those odds didn't deter them from questioning whether Jesus walked on water. After all, perhaps Jesus only surfed on a patch of floating ice. To be honest, I'm not sure which would be more amazing. Surfing on a piece of floating ice across the Sea of Galilee would take miraculous balance. And if those patches of ice appear only once every 1,000 years, it would take miraculous timing too. I'd love to see a high-definition slow-motion replay of either one, Jesus walking on water or surfing on ice. But Dr. Knopf's theory may reveal more about the human psyche than the circumstance between Jesus' miracle. We have a natural tendency to explain away what we cannot explain. And that's why most of us miss the miracle. I'm a natural skeptic. It's a miracle that I became a believer because I don't believe much. I don't trust much. But I trusted in Christ, thank God. So, we're beginning John 6, 15 through 21. So Jesus, aware that they intended to come and take him by force to make him king, withdrew again to the mountain by himself alone. You have to remember that this miracle happened in the Passover time, in the Passover season. So people come back and talk about the feeding of the 5,000. Really, it was about 15,000, including women and children, they estimated, but at least 5,000 men were fed miraculously by the loaves and the fish. And we already told you, we explained it, that the loaves were barley cakes about the size of a pancake, and the fish was meant as only a topping for the fish, for the bread. And that's why they gathered up only the bread, because the fish was not designed to keep overnight. So, filled with enthusiasm, the type of fervor which takes hold of a Jewish mob at the season of Passover, they were ready to proceed to Jerusalem. They saw in their midst their strong man. Jesus was an exceptional man, but they saw him as just a man who is able to effect cures and to provide bread and prosperity for everyone. Let me read it again. So Jesus, aware that they intended to come and take him by force. What kind of force would they use? That's the same word as in 1 Thessalonians 4 for the word rapture. Rapture is used because we have a Latin basis for our language, but the same word that it was used for the rapture, a snatching away, harpazo, was used for Jesus' fear that they would come and forcibly take him. The same word is used for Paul because they were worried on one of their trips that they would be forcibly taken away, snatched. If he refused to come along of his own accord, they actually intended to kidnap Jesus and take him and set him up as a king. I want to make it clear, they were going to snatch him and make him king. These wanted to force him to go with them. They intended, wanted to, seeing him in Jerusalem, they might crown him king, throwing off the yoke of the Romans and establishing the kingdom of God on the earth. He already said his kingdom was not of this world. But he whose kingdom is not of this world, it's then John 18:36, went away again to the hill, as in John 6:3. He went to the particular hill to spend time with his father. Why? His time to die had not come. I already said that I think that it's still 1 year before his death. That means that his entrance in Jerusalem the next time, the next year, would be the triumphal entry. He proceeded farther to the top in order to he might be by himself. But first, by the power of his word, he frustrated the design of a mob. He simply dismissed the vast throng, meanwhile ordering the disciples to go in a boat to row back to the other side of the Sea of Galilee. Now when evening came, his disciples went down to the sea. The disciples, having been ordered by Jesus to go before him to the other side, Matthew 14 discusses the same event, went down to the sea. John pictures them as having embarked in a boat. They proceed across the sea in the direction of Capernaum on the northwestern shore of the Sea of Galilee. And having gotten in a boat, they started to cross the sea to Capernaum. It had already become dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. Jesus had not yet come to them. John knows what's happened, and he's foreshadowing it, but he's telling the story from the perspective as he knows what's going to happen, but it hasn't happened yet. He employs phrases, "we're proceeding," and "was getting rough," or "was rising," to picture the condition respectively of the men in the boat and of the sea. But between these words, he makes use of the ideas darkness had come to be and Jesus had not come to indicate what had or not yet happened before the disciples had reached the opposite shore. When John says, "Now the darkness had already come," or "Now it was already dark," and Jesus had not come to them, he's writing from the point of view of one who himself had been in the boat and now, many years later, is writing this story. In addition, the sea began getting rough because a strong wind was blowing. From the deep and narrow valleys or gorges, between the hills to the west, the Lake of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, was surrounded by hills and valleys. It was under a depression, and it was actually below sea level. Strong blasts of winds came rushing down and suddenly struck the lake, whose surface lays 682 feet below the level of the Mediterranean. I've been told that I did some reading. If you have a lake that is lower than the adjacent level of the water, the sea, it will provide a vacuum. It will make a vacuum any time that the wind blows. So the Sea of Galilee, the Sea of Tiberias or Gennesaret, would be a strong wind factory. Soon, the storm was increasing in intensity. He goes out of his way to paint a picture. John is painting a picture as he did in the feeding of the 5,000. He's being intentionally dramatic. The night deepened. Hour upon hour, the disciples, used to the sea, were plying the oars. They were rowing hard because there was a storm. As they did so, they were facing Bethsaida, Judas, while their boat faced Bethesda of Galilee. They found themselves in a situation of real danger. That is from the human point of view. Then, when they saw that had rowed about 25 or 30 stadia, we'll talk about it, they see Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat. And they were not expecting him. They were frightened. What time is it? It was now 3 a.m. or later. From Matthew 14:25, it was the fourth watch of the night. They divided into approximately 3-hour periods, so it was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. Why is that significant? Jesus had told them to start rowing, I think, when it was still light. It was the spring. The days were getting longer, but they had been rowing for multiple hours. Likely they had been on the sea at least 6 hours rowing in the storm. Likely, they would be rowing from 6 o'clock, so they had been rowing about 9 hours. They would have been exhausted. So fierce was the storm. The boat had only covered 25 or 30 stadia. What's a stadia? Stadium is the singular of stadia, is an eighth of a mile. An eighth of a mile. So, the meaning is the boat had proceeded a distance of from 3 1/8 to 3 3/4 miles. They had been rowing for how long? At least 6 hours, likely 9. And they had only gone less than 4 miles. Now, the distance between the point from which they had started to the place where they landed was 5 miles. It seems probable. Then it is clear that the disciples were now indeed in the midst of the sea, as described in Mark 6:47. They had traveled only less than 4 miles as the crow flies, but you have to expect that they were rowing against the wind. So they had actually traveled a longer distance and done none more work. Besides, the possibility must not be discounted that they were driven somewhat off the course by the violence of the wind, or that they had attempted to, for a while, to hug the shore. At any rate, they still had a long way to go before reaching the destination. I want to point that out. Now, when they rode 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking upon the sea and approaching the boat, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." The wind and the waves did not seem to bother this man. This man shaped in the form of a man, at the least. That kind of disturbs the ice theory, because if the waves were rocking and waving and blowing, and he was surfing, he would have been surfing to the shore, not away from the shore. It was walking right in to the gale, the image. I'm speaking of Jesus as it right now, and walking so fast that it was gradually catching up with the boat, until for a moment it seemed as if it was going to pass on alongside of their boat. Picture this. The disciples were rowing, and they were rowing about 6 or 9 hours, and they were struggling. They hadn't gone very far, and this ghost-like image, they said it was a ghost, had been walking along, and he was beating them. He was walking faster. Thoroughly alarmed, the storm-weary disciples cried, "A ghost, a ghost," in Mark 6:48 and 6:49. They didn't know who it was, what image, and they were afraid it was a spirit. These details, which are furnished by Matthew and Mark, are omitted by John, but I wanted to include them. The reason for this fear was that at first the men did not know that it was Jesus. He tells them they should not worry and stop being afraid. According to Matthew and Mark, the words, "It is I," were preceded by "take heart," or "be of good cheer" in some translations. In Matthew 14:28-31, the story of Peter's attempt to walk on the waters to Jesus is told next, but We're going to omit it since it's not in John. Two miracles are seen here. Actually, four miracles take place. So they were willing to take him into the boat. Good idea, huh? And immediately, the boat was at the land to which they were going. John says that when the disciples were convinced that what they saw was not a ghost but the Lord himself, they were willing to take him aboard, which they actually did. Then the wind ceased, says Matthew 14:32, and John uses the word immediately. Mark is the gospel that most commonly used the word immediately, because it's for the Roman reader. But immediately is used by John to say that all at once, suddenly, unexpectedly, and it was a miracle, the boat, which when Jesus went aboard was still a long way from shore, was at the land where they were going. It was still, the wind stopped, and they were suddenly at their destination, Capernaum. This too is represented as a miracle. The one who had manifested his power over sickness in John 5 had absolute control over the winds and waves too. He was proving himself to be the Son of God to them in John 20:30-31 and Matthew 14:23. The miracles on the sea are really four miracles in one. Follow along. Four miracles in one. Jesus walks upon the sea without suspending the laws of gravity. He walked along the sea, but they still were struggling in the wind. He controls them in the interest of producing faith in his disciples. Second, he causes Peter to walk upon the sea, but this story is not found in John's gospel. He reveals himself as master of the storm, for when he enters the boat and the storm ceases, but not in John, but in Matthew 14:32, and he conquers even space. If you will, he does a Star Trek event. He teleports them, beams them. When he enters the boat, it is the shore all at once. He conquers even space and time. For us, although the miracle is told in all four Gospels, as John tells it, it is different. In John, it is distinctly a sign, and forms introduction to Christ's teaching on the bread of life. And most importantly, the disciples are still learning to trust him. They're still learning about him. The disciples are learning that the Lord, whom they know, also speaks peace to them. He wanted them to relax. He knew they had worked hard, and they needed to learn that all they needed to face any storm was Jesus and his presence, because they invited him in the boat, and suddenly it was calm, and they were transported somehow to where they needed to go. Mark Twain. Mark Twain married a younger woman, and they were married for at least 34 years, and they had a good relationship. He was accompanied by his wife on one of his visits to the Holy Land. Mark Twain used to, though I don't think he was a believer, He used to like to visit the Holy Land on his vacation trips. He would take a big trip, and it would have been a big trip 150 years ago. And he liked to see the pyramids, but he liked to see especially the places that Jesus walked. For some reason, he was mystified by them. They were staying in Tiberias on the Sea of Galilee. It was a moonlit night, and the weather was perfect, which gave Twain the romantic idea of taking his wife on a boat ride on the lake. I'll probably never take you on a boat ride of the Sea of Galilee. Mark Twain was filled with a romantic idea and fervor, and he got his wife out, and they walked down the pier in the dark. And Twain inquired of a man sitting in a rowboat, how much he would charge to row them out on the water. Twain was dressed in his usual white suit, white shoes, and a tall white Texas hat. The oarsman, presuming him to be a wealthy rancher from the United States, which he was not, turned to him and said, "Well, I guess it is about $25. That was before the days when if you worked for a dollar a day, you had a lot of money. He wanted $25 for a paddle across the lake. Mark Twain thanked him and said, as he turned away with his wife on his arm, he was heard to explain, and I think that was true, "Now I know why Jesus walked." It was a long buildup, I know, but it was a funny story. Jesus wants us to trust him. I say over and over again, what does God want most from us? He wants us to trust him, because if we trust him, we will believe on him, we'll believe the stories that are about him to be true, we'll believe that he died on the cross for us, we'll believe that he's coming back again for us, and we'll have the faith to have strength to believe in the Bible, which is going rarer and rarer today. We need to see our God. The disciples missed seeing God, even though they traveled with him for up to 3 years. By this time, they had traveled with him for 2 years, and they still needed to see and needed to believe in him in reality.